When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, welcome back to Pod on the Tyne. My name's Taylor Payne. It's an absolute pleasure to be back in your ears. I hope you're all doing well. Just 48 hours since our last podcast. That's the kind of breakneck speed we're working at these days. And I'm joined by Chris Woff and George Corgan. Hello, Chris Woff.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm not too bad, son. How are you? Are you all right?
Yes, I'm not too bad, thank you. I'm not too bad. I feel that promises have been broken, but we can get into that a bit later on.
Right, George. How are you doing? You okay?
I would like at this juncture to read from an official statement. Yes, Taylor, I'm fine. Thank you. Here ends the statement.
Good, lovely. I have my own statement to respond to that statement. Fantastic. Well done.
Excellent.
Lovely stuff. Yes, so like I said, 48 hours since our last podcast, but there have been some significant developments, chaps, haven't there? Let's get into the headlines in 30 seconds or less. George Corgan, a tale of two statements.
Ooh, yes. So on Tuesday night, we have...
No, come on, this is still part of your 30 seconds.
Is it? Yeah. Is it? All right, Alexander Isak released a statement. We've heard nothing from him so far this summer, but finally he talked about promises being broken, trust lost, a relationship can't continue. Newcastle immediately responded with a statement of their own saying no promises have been made. Isak remains their player. Conditions for a sale have not been met.
Well done. Excellent. Did you actually hear Chris cackling at the start of that when you messed
yeah,
up?
Yeah, I did. It's lovely, like this is supposed to be a way of like addressing news stories at the very top of the show to give us a sense of urgency to like let our listeners know what's been going on if they haven't been kept aware. It's not an shouldn't be like a competitive like
Oh, but it is.
Game. Yeah,
very much. Oh, so. But it Fine. Is. Christopher Woff, Johan Wisser, I can't even speak this morning.
Well, we should keep... He's cackling again. Wow, unbelievable.
Christopher Woff, Yorn Wissa rejection. 30 seconds, go.
Yes, so this is the latest Newcastle United bid for Yorn Wissa Brentford that has been rejected. It was a £35 million initial offer with £5 million on what had been described as difficult to achieve add-ons. Brentford rejected it. Both those things happened on Wednesday. The deal, if it isn't quite dead, it feels like it's very, very distant at this stage, certainly despondency at Newcastle. They really want him. He very, very much wants to come, but as things stand, it's not going to happen.
Stuff. Okay, Chris, you get another go here. Number nine latest. Go.
Well, Newcastle United do not have a number nine. They don't have one in terms of in their squad at the moment because Callum Wilson's left, and also obviously their actual centre forward in Alexander Isak is not playing. They are really like Wolves, Jorgen Strand-Larsen, but they, as things stand, that's not necessarily close. Wolves would need replacements. They are scouring Europe for that player who would probably be the alternative to Yorn Wissa if they cannot get Yorn Wissa. But with 11 days left, 12 days left in the window, as things stand, they haven't signed a single centre forward this summer.
There we go. Right then, George, finally for you, a new director of football for the Lasses.
Oh. Yes, this is true. This is actually something that that Chris has written alongside our athletic colleague Matt Woosnam. Grace Williams joins Newcastle Women from Crystal Palace, where she's had a similar role. She helped Palace get promotion to the Women's Super League for the first time. This is all part of a summer of huge change for the women set up at Newcastle, something that obviously we'll talk about at far greater length as we get closer to the start of their season.
There we go. Fabulously efficient, gents. Well done. Excellent stuff. Right then, let's talk about Alexander Isak. That statement came out on Instagram. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the general...
Just before you say it came out on Instagram, I mean, that's very, very footballer 2025, but it wasn't even just that he released it on Instagram. It was an Instagram story as well. So it was like one of the ones that you have to sort of click on at the time. I mean, I don't reuse Instagram, but equally, it's like one of those ones. It isn't some sort of officially drawn out statement, which has come out a different way. It is just, oh, here, posted onto my story. He has this massive bombshell of a statement. Yeah.
To be fair, I was just scrolling, blindly scrolling on Instagram, a couple of stories, clicked on a few things, and I saw Alex Isak and that black page with the white writing, and I thought, this can't be good. There's no way that this is good. It was a bit of a bombshell, wasn't it? But let's just skip over a few bits of it. He's speaking about he's kept quiet for a long time. The silence has allowed other people to push their versions. It doesn't really reflect what's going on behind closed doors, and that promises were broken, and the club has known his position for a long time, and he says the relationship can't continue. That's where things are for him right now, and that's why change is in the best interests of everyone, not just himself. It's the first time we've actually heard from the man himself, isn't it? Possibly via his social media crew, obviously, but it is effectively his voice, George, isn't it?
It is. It's got his name on the bottom of it, so he has to take responsibility for it. And yeah, I mean, it escalates matters further. I mean, that's what it definitely does do. While for as long as he remained silent, there was a get-out clause for him available, a get-out that the kind of club have left for him, that Eddie Howe's left for him, that he could kind of bring things round. Of course, we've seen it before when players have said, well, you know, there's been a lot of speculation about me, but that's never come from me. It's never been anything that I've said or done. You know, I'm committed to this club. I've never said anything different. Well, here is a statement that sets out in black and white exactly what Alexander Isak is thinking, exactly what his people, his team are thinking. And it's a very incendiary statement to talk about promises and trust lost and relationships can't continue. In those emotional terms, it's a big moment. And taking a step back, what is he trying to do here? Well, it feels to me like this is a concerted attempt to make his position even more untenable at Newcastle, to force through that move. He is saying, by talking about broken promises, by talking about trust being lost, by talking about relationships not being there anymore, he is effectively saying, you have to sell me now. You have to sell me. I am done at Newcastle. In terms of what's actually happened or happening, it doesn't change things. But in terms of ratcheting up the language and the pressure, it certainly is an escalation.
Chris, neither the club nor the players' reps have elaborated on what these supposed promises are that he claims to have received. Do we have any idea on what they actually are, the promises?
We have to apply some supposition here because, Newcastle basically, if in their statement, which we'll come on to in a minute, basically say that the promise or the suggestion that it was said to Isak that he could leave this summer, there was a commitment to that eventuality coming to pass definitively, what was not ever made. Now, what we believe or what we are led to believe it may refer to is that during the spring or early 2024, under the previous ownership, there may have been discussions between Alexander Isak and Amanda Staveley and others at the top of the club that potentially there would be discussions about an extended contract, an improved contract coming up that summer. Not in terms of a firm commitment, from what we understand, not all, we haven't been led to believe it was a firm promise, but that there were suggestions that was going to happen. Yet, obviously then, there was the PSR debacle of June 2024, Newcastle sell Elliot Anderson and Yankuba Minter. And then Paul Mitchell arrives as sporting director, and basically there's almost a sort of tightening of the belt around the entire club. They obviously go three consecutive windows without signing a first 11 player. They couldn't really afford to give too many wage rises. They have given improved contracts during that time to the likes of Anthony Gordon, but for Alexander Isak, he had 4 years remaining on his deal at that point. He was among the highest earners, and so it was sort of put on the back burner, and Newcastle insists that there were potentially going to be talks this summer, and that was what was always planned, that it was then kicked it in the long grass almost, but that they were willing to sit down and discuss with Isak this summer. But clearly he feels, or once has put out there, that he believes he's been led up the garden path with at least some commitments which are made there. So it's basically, as George has already said in previous podcasts that we've done, basically this is you speak to one side and get their version of the truth and another side and get the opposite. Isak's statement was pointed and accusatory, but at the same time it was vague enough to leave this open to interpretation.
Yeah,
and that's what I think is why we're all sort of scratching our heads a little bit. Certainly at Newcastle they are scratching their heads a little bit as to what precisely this refers to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that that's exactly what I've taken from the talk about promises. I think that's the idea that he would be allowed to leave the club this summer, because very early on in Newcastle's response, which I know we'll come up to, they say we are clear in response that Alex remains under contract and that no commitment has ever been made by a club official that Alex can leave Newcastle United this summer. So, I mean, I think that's the nub of the disagreement, that yes, okay, there's been conversations about a contract which in the end have gone nowhere, but that in response to that contract talk not being not going further, Isak or his people have said that, okay, well, in those circumstances, this is going to be my last season at Newcastle. And whether there's been some sort of agreement, tacit or otherwise, about that. So I think that's the promise that's being referred to, or which the club absolutely deny. That is then the source of sort of trust being broken down over this summer.
We've had a little message off Ted as well, who said agents seem to catch some of the flack from fans and reporters and the like. But I think that a player like Isak should be upset with his representatives, who poorly advised him to take a handshake promise with a person whose position at the club turned out to not be permanent.
Yeah, I mean, again, on that is supposition. And again, as Chris mentioned, you're sort of, it's one side says one thing, the other side says another. I mean, all I would say on this is that, like, a contract is a promise, but a contract is a written promise. And I do think this is quite important too, that, that is the contract that you have between a player and a club is that you will play for them, you'll train for them, and obviously you give your best for them. And when we're talking about promises, again, you get into an emotional area, but Isak is breaking his promise to the club.
Exactly.
Something that he has signed, and that is very difficult to forgive.
It certainly is. The club obviously responded to this in this PR world that we live in. You have to get out ahead of these things, don't you? The club have said they're disappointed about the post, are clear in their response that Alex remains under contract and obviously no commitment was ever made. We want to keep our best players. We understand that players have their own wishes. We always take into consideration the best interest of Newcastle United. We do not foresee the conditions being met for a sale. and they talk about being a proud football club with traditions who strive to retain our family feel. Alex is welcome back when he is ready to rejoin his teammates. Now, Chris, I liked that last line. I liked it a lot. I thought it was very clever. Nicely done.
Yeah, I mean, the last line is almost, I think George said to me the other day, used the term sort of killing with kindness in the end. It's sort of that is, again, as almost in the way Eddie Howe has sort of toed the line all summer, it leaves that possibility open that he will rejoin the group. And given that Newcastle have been adamant he isn't for sale, then they have to keep it like that, because otherwise they're basically saying we're going to have an asset to the value at the best part of £150 million just sitting around because they don't want him to rejoin. Now, this was an extraordinary response from Newcastle to something that one of their own players has released, which blindsided them. They did not know that it was coming, that Isak was going to release his statement, having not appeared at the PFA Awards, to then release this and basically take it public for the first time. That came just after about 8 o'clock, Isak's statement. This came maybe three and a half hours later. Yeah. It was rushed around in terms of people inside Newcastle. The wording was very meticulously picked through. And when George referred to earlier as a bit that no club official had made that commitment to Isak, each of those club officials were gone to and made it clear, was this ever said, so that they can actually put this in writing. Also, PIF themselves were involved in the drafting of the statement and getting out there, and people close to PIF basically say it's almost unprecedented that they would release something of this magnitude so quickly. But that was how strong the feeling was inside the club, how, I suppose, disappointed they were with it, with Isak taking it public, and the want to actually get out their side of things publicly. We've only had Eddie Howe's version of events up to this stage. Now we have the club themselves talking about this. And I think it was interesting that within it, what they've basically admitted is that they want to keep Isak, but at the same time, there could have been a version, this summer could have played out differently, in that potentially he could have left if they talk about conditions of a sale had transpired, that they don't see those conditions being met from now. Now, what we understand those to be is that Newcastle need to sign two strikers, one to replace Callum Wilson, the other to replace Alexander Isak, and for the Alexander Isak one to be ideally of a sort of Champions League level, a sort of not just any striker, they want a sort of top level or a potential elite signing, and then also for their asking price to be met. None of those three conditions have yet been met. Newcastle hope to at least one of them will be by the end of the window, because they're desperate to sign a striker. But that is, I think that is interesting as well, that they've sort of tried to show to Isak as well, they've tried to facilitate that if the conditions could have been met, maybe there was a route out for him. But basically, they as a club have to look after themselves, and that is by keeping a hold of their star striker.
There's another kind of element to it as well, isn't there? One of the sort of extraordinary things about this week has just been the timing of this. Obviously, the next game is Liverpool at home on Monday night. We all know that. Hmm. And then, of course, we are also racing towards the end of the transfer window. It's the 1st of September when it closes. And, you know, this is an act of selfishness. I'm not saying that as a kind of massive criticism, but it's like it's a very individual act. I mean, he is acting in his own interest. Obviously, that goes without saying. But, you know, in the context of this game against Liverpool coming up, it sort of runs counter to everything about a team and about a club. Now, if you go back to the end of last season, and if Isak had chosen that moment to release a statement on Instagram and said, "Thank you for this incredible journey that I've been on for the last couple of years. You know, the scenes at Wembley will live with me forever. To have been part of the team that won Newcastle United their first domestic trophy for 70 years, to get back into the Champions League, these things will live with me forever. I cannot tell you how proud I am of the team, the city, the supporters, blah, blah, blah. But I feel that this is now the right time for me to move on and seek another challenge. I want to move to a club that can challenge for the Premier League trophy, for the Champions League every season. That's where I think I am. A player's career is short. Thank you so much for everything. This should
have been done much easier, couldn't it?
Circumstances change in football. We all know that. But if that's what he really, truly felt where he was, that he really, truly felt that the promises had been made, he could have ended it in that sense. Now, would we have been delighted as a fan base with that decision? No. But would we have understood it? Yes, because, you know, yeah, we, in an ideal world, you wouldn't want him to go to a Premier League rival. But this, you know, this idea that Newcastle can pay what Liverpool can pay or Real Madrid or all of those things. Are Newcastle at a position in their development where they can challenge for those biggest trophies this season, right now, or in the next couple of years? Probably not. I think most of us are realistic. And it could have been done that way, for him to effectively down tools and then go to war with his own team, with his own club, just feels so wrong. And that's why it feels extraordinary to me.
Many Newcastle fans, Chris, especially older ones like George, remember a time when all of Newcastle's best players were moved on.
Yeah, and I mean, I suppose that this brings back sort of echoes of certainly in modern history, the Mike Ashley era, yes. Andy Carroll being sold, Johan Gabay, other players moving on. You go further into history and Paul Gascoigne and Chris Waddle and Andy Cole. Although there was an element of choice there as well, I think, with Andy Cole, slightly different to the others, I suppose.
Yeah, but those scenes of Keegan, hero, being surrounded by bewildered fans saying, what is going on, was again, you know, it did sort of tell that story of how, of like the visceral response Newcastle fans have to selling their best players. It's not something that anybody wants to do, because you do have those things baked into your memory or your parents' memory or the club's history. At some point, Newcastle are going to have to sell a really, really good player, and it's going to hurt. But all the big clubs do that these days. It's just, you know, the irony is, it's you do not want it to be Alexander Isak, and you do not want it to be now, when you have to go back into the Champions League, when you're wanting to build around your best players.
But on that point, it's that for Newcastle, part of the such strong position they've held on this is the, rather than it just being sort of losing your best players, at some point Newcastle will sell some of their best players, because in a PSL world you have to, but it's about the message this sends to others within the squad as well, that you cannot act like this. Next summer, for example, if someone comes in and makes a bid for Anthony Gordon or Sandro Tonali or the like, and it's nowhere near what Newcastle want for him, and the message is you can't just act in this same sort of way, and we will be bullied, A, by the club you're trying to sign, but B, by the player themselves. As George said, they've signed a contract to be with you, and if your valuation is met, if we get a decent enough price for you and can replace you, then yes, there just has to be a realisation Newcastle are going to have to trade inwards and outwards, but it has to be largely on their terms and for the betterment of the club. I mean, the statement is extraordinary. In the last few years, the only thing I can compare it to in terms of Newcastle responding to one of their own members of staff is when Newcastle failed to sign Hamza Chowdhury and then released a statement under Mike Ashley, basically admonishing the head coach for, again, it talked about sort of everyone being on the same page, and that basically they all understood where they were at. And there are parallels. It's a very different situation, but there are sort of parallels there in terms of the actual football club coming out and releasing a statement in counter to one of their own. At the time, it was the head coach, who was obviously one of the most important people of the football club, and now to their star player, to release a statement. It's a different regime, it's a different time.
Yeah.
But it is absolutely.
It shows you how much the world's changed,
doesn't
it, Chris? But between those two things.
Could Hamza Chowdhury play up front?
Could he do a job, George? Could he do a job?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes, we've had a message from Big Dan from Canada as well. Surely this is not an ideal situation for Sweden. You could conceivably have a scenario where it may not just be Newcastle that's irritated with him, but his teammates on the national team and Swedish footy fans in general. It kind of, George, it kind of talks to Alexander Isak's attitude a bit, doesn't it? And how his compatriots in Sweden would be feeling about it.
This has kind of always been part of Newcastle's thinking on this subject, that obviously things have ratcheted up another notch this week, but the theory has always been that, yes, he may be saying right here, right now, that he's not going to play for the club again, but when the Champions League comes around, for instance...
World Cup next year as well.
Is he really going to sit out Champions League matches? And of course, the other thing is, potentially with a World Cup on the horizon, does this actually serve in his interest? That's always been part of the club's thinking. But of course, you know, there is this sort of huge balancing act. Is Isak trying to force himself to a position of no return? Can the club bring him back? What do Liverpool do? All those things remain in the balance.
Addy Orchid.
Okay, fair play. Let's move on from Alexander Isak. Replacing Callum Wilson, let's talk about that. A new second bid was submitted to Brentford by Newcastle for striker Yohan Wissa, roughly £40 million in total, significantly lower, though, than Brentford's official valuation, Chris.
Just on that, I mean, Brentford have sort of countered the idea they have an official valuation, and I think the valuation is not actually the important bit here. If Newcastle went and suddenly bid £60 million, I think the deal would happen, but the issue is not so much the offer Newcastle made. I think Brentford see the offer being a good offer, and if they had a replacement themselves, I think it may just about have been enough to get him. The issue is almost the same as Newcastle and Isak is. To Brentford, in a relative sense, Wissa is irreplaceable in the timescale that there is. As things stand, they haven't signed a replacement, so therefore they won't let Wissa go because he's worth more to them than whatever his market value is or whatever the money is. He's turned 29 next month. They recognise that's a lot of money for a player of that age, and I think that's the part that people are almost missing out here. It's not about this sort of figure necessarily. Now, I wanted to address that a lot of fans have said, why have Newcastle pursued Wissa for so long? And I entirely get that. And also, there's been some people complaining about this sort of 5 million add-ons being difficult to achieve. Why not just make them easier to achieve? I think the reason difficult to achieve is because Newcastle don't really actually want to pay 40 million for Yohan Wissa. They don't think they should be paying that much for a player of that age. So rather than it being almost like a guaranteed 40 million with the 5 million add-ons being easily achievable, it's more that if Newcastle do really, really well and Wissa does really, really well, they will pay them. But in terms of that situation, as I said earlier, as of last night, there was a lot of despondency around it. There's a feeling, some at Newcastle, I think, have felt for a good few weeks that it was unlikely. But Wissa's people have continued to push it, and some people at Newcastle feel that he's the sort of best option there. And if they can extract him from Brentford, then that's almost a ready-made, really good replacement for Callum Wilson, someone who has Premier League experience, who scored 19 goals from open play last year, has a bit of versatility, can play across the front three. And so he's an ideal profile in so many ways, slightly older than I ideally like, but an ideal profile. And also there is just a very, very small market of potentially available forwards out there, a very inflated market. And it's also almost at a standstill because, like with Brentford and Wissa, and like with Newcastle and Isak, clubs don't want to let players go until they've signed someone. And so the domino effect is not happening. The other issue is the players who potentially are available, Newcastle have understandable concerns about some of them, because why are they actually available? That is always the issue here.
And Chris, you mentioned Jürgen Strand Larsen at the top of the show. We mentioned a few other targets in our Q&A podcast earlier on in the week. What is happening with other targets? Are Newcastle actively pursuing other targets?
They are, yeah, and they've even been trying to keep sort of irons in the fire while they've been pursuing Wissa. Now, that's difficult to do when it just drags on for a long period of time, because sort of agents and players then start to realise, oh, hang on a second, are we just being ourselves strung along here a little bit? But Jürgen Strand Larsen, they definitely like. I don't think they know what necessarily the price would be. And again, the issue is Wolves signing a replacement. But that is one to keep an eye on, I think, because Newcastle really like what he could offer. He's a tall physical presence up front, but he can also link up play, has that Premier League experience from last year now. So that's one to look at. They've Gonçalo Ramos at Paris Saint-Germain has sort of been proposed to them. He's someone that I think they would consider potentially on loan, but that looks unlikely. Yeah. And so it's like a €60 million fee, which they wouldn't want to pay. Nicholas Jackson keeps getting mentioned with Chelsea. Again, profile-wise, I think in terms of what he brings as a striker, there's a lot to like there in terms of he would really improve under Eddie Howe, but there are reservations, I think, about how he's acted in some sort of ways. Obviously sent off at St. James's Park last year. Rodrigo Munoz is another name who's sort of been put to Newcastle, but Fulham, again, would need a replacement. I think he cost a heck of a lot of money. So this is a roundabout way of me saying that there are very few options, or certainly Newcastle have basically tried to explore just about every single option out there. They continue to. They're determined to try and sign a striker by deadline. With every passing day, you have to say there is at least an outside possibility that they don't bring someone in. That's certainly not an eventuality they want to consider. That's not the point they want to get to. They would consider loans, I think. But again, loans are difficult to achieve in the sense that why would a club loan you one of their best players? So therefore, you're probably taking a risk on someone, whether that be they've been sidelined elsewhere, there's been concerns over their attitude or the like. So a loan is not beyond the realms of possibility, but circumstances need to change and Newcastle need to find someone who would be available and would fit exactly what they want. That's a roundabout way of saying they're not necessarily close to anything.
George, are we worried about going into Monday's game against Liverpool, massive game that, without a new centre-forward? I know I certainly am slightly concerned about that.
I'm not worried about that. I am worried about going into the rest of the season without a centre forward, as Chris talked about. I mean, that is my big concern here. It'd be asking a lot of any centre forward who comes into the club now to be starting against Liverpool in any case anyway, particularly with famously the demands Eddie Howe puts on his players and things like that. I mean, I think that would be a really tough ask. I think that game almost takes care of itself in the sense of the atmosphere, the players are going to be massively up for it. Anthony Gordon, for obvious reasons, is going to be massively up for it. There's going to be huge pace in the team. If Liverpool have the ball, Newcastle have the ability to attack them on the break. I don't, you know, like those things I'm not like too worried about, but I am worried about the rest of the season. Newcastle need a centre forward. I think it's unbelievable in some ways that, you know, the club that is famous for the number nine shirt, is empty. Obviously, Callum Wilson filled that shirt, not Isak, but Isak effectively is Newcastle's number nine, and he's not playing. And it's like that shirt needs to be filled.
I wonder when the last time that happened was, Chris. You must know the last time Newcastle didn't have a number nine when the season started.
When the season actually started, I'm struggling to think in sort of recent years because when Carroll left, it was mid-season, so it was vacated at that stage. Yeah. Did it then go into the next year
Didn't Cissé take it that year? Demba Ba?
That was the following January, though, I think, wasn't it? So they must have started the season without a
nine. Good question.
Yeah, 2011-12, possibly. I can't think in the years subsequently that they wouldn't have done, because Cissé then it would have been...
Dwight Gayle after that.
Dwight Gayle, yeah, and then Salomon Rondon had it, so...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Please email in if you know the answer, podinthetine@gmail.com.
Let us know.
Right then, chaps, let's talk Liverpool with a very special guest coming up in just a moment.
I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
So Newcastle's first home game of the Premier League season, and it could prove to be an absolute firecracker. The Reds reacted to a dominant title-winning season by making significant moves in the transfer market, and having seen off Bournemouth at Anfield, they'll want to continue a good start by beating the team who embarrassed them at Wembley in March. All of this with the most talked-about transfer in world football hanging over the home side. What do Liverpool fans make of all this? Well, let's find out. Neil Atkinson, a man of many talents, is one of the driving forces behind the juggernaut that is the Liverpool fan podcast, The Anfield Wrap. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome you to Pod on the Tyne, Neil. Thank you for joining us.
Very good to join you, Taylor. Excellent stuff.
Yeah, lovely, lovely stuff. We're going to talk about all sorts, but let's start with a mere 5 months ago. We spoke to Tony Evans about what a great relationship there is between Newcastle and Liverpool fans. And is that great relationship still there?
I sort of can't think of any reason why it shouldn't be. I'm coming up on Sunday. I love going out to Newcastle. So when they moved this to Monday night, it was in a way annoying, but the flip side of it was it gave us a bank holiday Sunday and Monday in Newcastle.
Yes.
And I am eager, to say the least, to get amongst it. Like, I want to explain how eager. I think I would be getting picked up from ours at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Nice.
For an 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday night. That is a level of eager to be around Newcastle, because, as I say, genuinely really like Newcastle. I think it's great. Love going out there. Was there last season for the 3-3, had a lovely day, and you know, it's a place where a lot of people from Liverpool have gone and for instance been to uni. The current kerfuffle around the transfer bit with Isak, I think, is why it has to necessarily become something that massively impacts supporters, other than A, Newcastle supporters loving watching Isak play, and B, Liverpool supporters maybe wanting to watch Isak play. I think it's all just been a little bit unnecessary. And I understand why this stuff becomes sort of the realm of people determinedly doing banter. I don't think it helps when theoretically mainstream broadsheet journalists decide to position themselves in some way as though they are most definitely taking a side around all of this quite as emphatically as has been seen. But ultimately, this for me is as simple as, you know, there's a player, Liverpool want to buy him. He seemingly is pretty eager to come to Liverpool. Newcastle have him under contract for 3 years, for which I think one of the biggest learnings of all of this should be these footballers who are signing 6, 7, 8, 9 year deals should be ensuring either A, not doing it full stop, which would be my preferred outcome, or B, ensuring that they're littered with release clauses that are reasonable and can be met. Ultimately, he's still under contract for Newcastle for 3 more years. That then creates a problem for Newcastle around morale. But none of this, as I say, I don't think it says a little bit about where Newcastle currently are as a club. or where they've been as a club. I think that Newcastle on the pitch had a frankly excellent 24-25, which was rightly enjoyed by Newcastle supporters. But it appears that off the pitch, things weren't quite right. And one of those instances, by the way, is genuinely tragic and sad, which is the situation around the health of the CEO for an extended period. But it looks to me from the outside as though Liverpool, who are very well run, if quite risky in the way in which they go about the transfer business, are trying to deal with a Newcastle who, for an extended period of arguably not being as well run around the squad management and transfer business, and everyone else, those two things are what's battling in amongst this in the context of Alexander Isak. And even almost dialing down the he said, she said aspects of it, well, he said because it's football and everyone's a man, Amanda Staveley being missing in this now might actually be a key part of it. But whatever's happened, it seems reasonable to presume that Isak and his people have communicated to Newcastle they'd rather that he wasn't playing for Newcastle this season, that they'd like a little bit of a plan. How far along that's gone is, you know, a little bit up in the air. You know, what's been formally agreed or formally reached is a little bit separate. But within that, football clubs should be constantly planning for all eventualities. All the good ones are. All the good ones are. And it does seem a little bit to me from the outside as though Newcastle should have been in a position to genuinely capitalise on what was an excellent season on the pitch last season. And really weirdly, they've ended up sort of having to play defensively on this. Liverpool would like the player, have made one offer. Liverpool are prepared, I think it seems reasonable to say, to break the British transfer record to buy the player, break Liverpool's transfer record to buy the player, and break Newcastle's record to buy the player. We're talking about, here about nine-figure sums. It is not the money of any Newcastle season ticket holder. It is not going into our bank accounts, unfortunately. But thankfully, it's not being taken from our bank accounts. So my general thing on this is that if one can move away from Bantz, which I think we should all be encouraged to do so at every single opportunity, then there's no reason really why anyone should think there's anything. Now listen, there'll be some back and forth on the terraces because that's where the football happens and where it matters, and if you want to do bants, I would always much rather do it in front of the grass as the football match is happening. But here we are, here we find ourselves, this is the way the world is now. I just think that Newcastle are a club who are and should still view themselves as being genuinely on the march.
So that
it's just that. Go on.
Sorry, Neil. That was something I kind of wanted to mention. I mean, I totally agree with everything you've said there. I'm interested to know from your perspective, can you sort of explain how Newcastle are viewed from Liverpool? I mean, I don't mean historically, and I don't mean in terms of like, are Newcastle kind of thought as a rival of Liverpool's now? I mean, are we thought of as irrelevant? You know, like where?
No, the truth is somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So on the, you know, genuinely, we've got two rivals going into the season to win the Premier League. One's Arsenal, one's Manchester City. That's not to say that in 3 years' time, A, we will still be in the Premier League title picture, or B, Newcastle won't be.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, and our Newcastle arrival for Liverpool for trophies. Well, yeah, they beat us in a final last year.
Yeah.
You know, you can, whichever way you want to take that, you can't argue with the facts. Chelsea have just been made world champions, but I don't think they're in a position to genuinely, in inverted commas, rival Liverpool for the biggest title in England this season. I just don't think that that's the case. Could they win the FA Cup or the League Cup? Absolutely, yeah, but, you know, the idea of anything else. But that's the point at the minute. Liverpool, Manchester United at the minute, if you want to talk about rivalries, we have an ongoing rivalry with Manchester United. We've got an ongoing rivalry with Everton.
Yeah.
But they're not our rivals for the title this season unless something quite profound's happening. And unlikely and very un-David Moyes. But do I think that, for instance, you know, Newcastle, up until this summer, in a way, if you'd have said to me, I do other Newcastle fan podcasts before we play them, and one of the things I always say is why I would be excited, if we take the politics of it out, why I would be excited as the Newcastle supporter is I think there's a journey that they're on, that you are on, that ends with lifting the league title. And I would have genuinely thought that until possibly around the 1st of July this year. What would worry me is what I think all of this has thrown into harsh relief from the point of view of Newcastle supporters is that at least right now it doesn't feel as though Newcastle have had the infrastructure to be able to be constructively planning and accepting that part of what this is, as it was for Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp, as it was for Liverpool in 1976 or 77 when they sell Kevin Keegan and buy Kenny Dalglish, as has been the case for football clubs all the way through time. Manchester United sell David Beckham. Manchester United sell Jaap Stam.
Yeah.
Manchester United sell Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes a player leaves, but you can emerge from it stronger. And it looks to me like Newcastle have, from the outside, and you're all better informed than me, but it looks like rather than even begrudgingly deal with this forthcoming reality, it looks to me like, at least for a period, there's been a desire to stick the head in the sand about this. And I would worry, in an ongoing sense, at least for the next couple of years, that this is a structural issue that'll take a little bit of undoing, that you've got to constantly plan for the future. You've got to, you know, you've got to think. I, at the minute, for instance, have a bit of a theory that Liverpool, and I'm saying this, I think this might be the first time I've said that on the show anyway, but I think that Liverpool may think, or may even have planned, or may even at least had a conversation where Mo Salah's not playing for Liverpool for the start of next season.
Yeah.
That even though we signed a 2-year deal, Liverpool might have in the back of their mind that Salah might just go next season for a fee. Liverpool get the fee and go from there. And Salah is, the post-Klopp era, the greatest Liverpool attacker. He'll end up third highest scorer in Liverpool's history, which is a hell of a place to be. He may well be the best player ever to play in the Premier League. But Liverpool already are right now, part of why I think they want Isak and they want him to the extent that they're prepared to pay the money they are, is because they're planning for a post-Salah future in 2027. I think it might be in 2026. The purchases of Isak, of Gomes, you know, for me, these are tremendous signings. They weren't a shock that these were good players, but other clubs just weren't sure. But Newcastle took a risk. And it looks like this summer, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Newcastle have wanted more sure things and to take fewer risks. When we signed Sadio Mane, Southampton supporters were saying to us, he's really streaky. Salah had failed. He'd failed in England, playing for Chelsea. Hoffenheim is where we got Roberto Firmino from.
Yeah.
These were risks. We got the risks right and we leapt forward.
I mean, you mentioned about risk, though. I mean, I suppose Isak would be different in that sense for Liverpool, because obviously he's established it in the Premier League. But just in terms of on Isak, from a sort of Liverpool perspective, and I know you can't speak for all supporters, but is he the one that if you could have selected anyone, you would want them to be pursuing? And B, how he's reacted subsequently, his conduct over the last few weeks, releasing the statement in the way he did, not training, not playing. Are there concerns there?
The concerns are probably no, maybe wrongly, actually maybe a little bit wrongheadedly, but I think sort of no. I remember Philip Coutinho's back strain, which, you know, Philip Coutinho didn't play for Liverpool in the 2017-18 season until the 13th of September because he had a back strain. And, you know, you can have your own opinion on how strained his back actually was. There is a long litany of footballers who've refused to play for extended periods and gone on and either reintegrated themselves, which is worth pointing out from a Newcastle perspective, but also have also moved on and done really, really well. I didn't think the statement was necessary. That's probably my one where I was the most. I just don't think that was particularly necessary from Isak's point of view. There may well be something about he wanted to mark in some way the PFA moment for him a little bit, like a bit of professional pride ends up being sort of informed by his own opinion at that point in time. I feel as though discretion might have been the better part of valour where that's concerned. Maybe even just a little bit of a thank you to everyone who provided the platform. And then on Isak, was he the? I think obviously, without sort of having an encyclopedic knowledge of European football, Isak was the most available, most likely to be at least possibly available, to rephrase, top striker that I knew of for Liverpool to get after. All of that said, I think Ekitike's looked great so far, both in pre-season games.
That's the other kind of interesting sort of layer to this whole thing, is that Ekitike is a player that Newcastle were sort of chasing, and then Liverpool swoop in and he goes there. He started obviously very well in a Liverpool shirt. I suppose my question to you is, I mean, it's a very difficult one to answer, but how do you think the next 10 days or so play out? I mean, in terms of Isak, do you have a feeling that he'll eventually end up your player in this window, or how do you think it'll play out?
I think he might, but I think, listen, again, so much of this I think is just informed from the Newcastle perspective. They have the player under contract. They can choose to be whatever they choose to be. For me, Ekitike is interesting in that, you know, when it comes out, after Liverpool signed Ekitike, it comes out Liverpool have been talking to him since January and have been interested since January. I feel as though why this is a more complicated conversation, and I saw, for instance, Jamie Carragher talk about this, and a few Liverpool supporters didn't like where he ended up, but I understood why it was difficult. But I'm going to trust your audience. I think the biggest variable that there's been in this all the way through the summer has actually been Diogo Jota. So I think Liverpool go into the summer and they've got a first and second choice as to who they want to come in as and when they sell Darwin. I think they've expected to sell Darwin Nunez, and they've had in the back of their minds at some point there might be an offer that we like for Luis Diaz. And I think that the plan to move forward, and a lot of this is think, you can't know unless we manage to get Richard Hughes or Arne Slot on here and make them answer the questions honestly. We'll never know. But I think the plan to move forward with Salah, with Gakpo, with Jota, and then with two replacements, one replacing Diaz, one replacing Nunez. I think they may have had in the back of their mind that Ekitike could replace Diaz because he can do some stuff off the left and play through the middle. And last season, Diaz for us plays off the left and plays through the middle. But I think that ultimately Liverpool go into the summer with the idea that our first choice is Isak, our second choice is Ekitike. And that's what Liverpool move through with. And I think that the universe of Newcastle could sign Ekitike and it could lead to Liverpool signing Isak, I think that may well have been possible prior to what happens with Diogo Jota. Liverpool then react in a very Liverpool way, which is there's two strikers that we really like. We don't compromise on our signings and our priorities. We're just going to go and get them both. And that's where Liverpool end up. I think that this may well already have played out or have been resolved differently if the tragic events, and trust me, this is low down the list of the ramifications of the tragic events of Diogo Jota and Andre Silva. But I think that if we put our practical hat on, I think that this is what happens. And then Liverpool are all of a sudden in a position where they know Darwin Nunez is going. Increasingly, I think that they may well have made a promise to Luis Diaz that if a certain figure was reached, they would accept a bid. And Bayern Munich reached that figure. And Liverpool then have only got Mo Salah and Cody Gakpo. So Liverpool activate, right, we want Hugo Ekitike. We feel as though we can do this for us and this for us. And Liverpool, if you actually get the timeline of this, you know, it's in the aftermath of the of all of the tributes to Jota that the Ekitike thing begins to move along. And I think that's why we never know this stuff. You know, even people as well informed as you and Chris, George, we never know this stuff 100%, but we get the whispers. So I think that that's what then happens. And Liverpool literally had two forwards at that point in time that they would have viewed as senior forwards because of what's happened. Yeah. And they know what's going to happen with Nunez. They know what. So that's what they were moving forward with. So I think Liverpool then say, we need to secure this sure thing. And then they want to get to Isak. I think that all of this would have played out differently in the universe, in that alternative universe, and you go from there. And I'm worried for Liverpool. I do think that's, if I say sense will prevail, I think the right thing to do, genuinely for Newcastle, or the right thing to have done, would have been to nail down a top quality replacement for Isak, ideally one who's under 24 and somebody to back him up.
Neil, we have to speak about Monday. Obviously, the atmosphere is likely to be very, very lively, isn't it, with the Alexander Isak stuff adding a level of spice.
It will be, but also it always is. Like, I was at the 3-3 and it was great.
Yeah.
So let's not, you know, I think that there's, I'm sure there'll be, you know, part of Newcastle's trophy win last season was an underrated achievement, and one of the reasons it was an underrated achievement was the road to the final. It's like the Newcastle play everyone who finishes in the top 10 in the Premier League, it feels like, to win that trophy. And part of what happens is, for instance, the atmosphere when Newcastle played Arsenal at St. James's Park, just on the telly, I obviously wasn't there, was absolutely rip-roaring. The atmosphere for the 3-3 is absolutely unbelievable. Newcastle are all up at them from minute one, every single player. I thought that it was actually beginning to ebb a little bit, the first half momentum, and then Isak just whacks it in from 25 yards. But I felt Liverpool had sort of seen it off. But, you know, he then, part of why he is so special is he powers that ball home from practically nothing. But the point I'm trying to make here is this is always a big atmosphere.
Yeah.
I think it will be a big atmosphere, but Liverpool's players need to, you know, be grown-ups and put the big boy pants on and play a game of footy in front of a vociferous crowd. I'm sure they can manage that.
They've got a pretty intimidating attack, Liverpool. Is there any concerns with the rest of the team, maybe at the back?
I've got a concern with the attack. Liverpool haven't got a sub. This is where Liverpool have ended up, and this is why, you know, there's a lot of the wider sort of situation for this window from a Liverpool point of view is Liverpool's starting front three is really exciting. It's really good. They've got Florian Wirtz in behind. Maybe he doesn't start all four of those players, the front three and Wirtz, in this one because he needs a sub. But Liverpool haven't got a sub. Liverpool have not got five. Liverpool, part of why Liverpool won the league last season, they've got five senior forwards, the poorest of which was Darwin Nunez. And I'd argue he produced when he had to at the level of Arsenal and Manchester City's third best option. You know, Nunez scores some big goals. Liverpool, that's part of why Liverpool won the league.
I mean, if we're being concerned about what we haven't got, we haven't got a striker. So,
but you've got forward options. So you've got Barnes, you've got Murphy, you've got Gordon, you've got Alanga.
You've got as many wingers as you could shake a stick at. We don't have anybody through the middle.
Got pace. Yeah.
Got tons of pace, and you've got subs. I think Paris Saint-Germain have just won everything. And they did not start last season with a recognised centre-forward beyond Ramos, who they didn't want to use. I think having that rotation in attack and being able to have those options is no bad thing at all. Genuinely, I don't. If you'd have said to me at the start of this window, Liverpool are going to let Diaz, put the Jota thing to one side, but Liverpool are going to let Diaz and Nunez go, and they're going to pick up Rodrigo and Anthony Gordon, I wouldn't have gone, we haven't got a centre forward. I'd go, great. That we can win the European Cup with those options. So having options, having subs, having pace, being able to change it, having five options is massive. So Newcastle have got that. You know, obviously everyone would rather say, and this is the lad who plays number nine, and this is why he number nine's it. But, you know, Mane, Salah, Firmino, none of them were pure number nines. All of them had some attributes like number nines, but none of them are pure number nines. There's an argument City's football's less good since they picked up Haaland, whilst Haaland is obviously absolutely incredible at the same time. I've got a concern about the attack. Midfield, Gravenberch will be back, which is really important for us, but I actually thought last season Howe was the first manager that we played in the 3-3 who had a bit of a Gravenberch plan. The flip side of having a bit of a Gravenberch plan is then you then need an Alexis McAllister plan as well, and it's very difficult to have a plan for both. You can't cover two holding midfielders. You can focus on one. As it stands, we could still do with another centre-back. We'll be fine for this game almost certainly, unless there's something I don't know as we chat. But in the round, when the season gets going properly, we could still do with another centre back. But for me, the biggest concern, genuinely, going into this one on Monday, is we don't have a sub. Chiesa scores to make it 3-2, but the manager didn't trust Chiesa to bring him on in the Charity Shield, and he's very rarely started matches that matter for Liverpool. Chiesa. Then the next one off the list is Rio Ingamawa, who's 16. He might be 17 at the time of kickoff. He will definitely start Salah, but I think he may not start one of Wiertek, Ekitike and Gakpo, so that he can turn around on his bench on 60 and bring on one of Wiertek, Ekitike or Gakpo.
Well, there you go. It's going to be an interesting night, whatever happens on Monday.
Oh, it's going to be ferocious.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's been great fun.
Yeah, it's been brilliant, Neil. Thanks ever so much.
All good.
We won't wish you luck for Monday.
We'll see how it plays out. But you're right. We have to look at this from a historical perspective. It's always been just a brilliant, brilliant fixture. So much history, so much memory. Two very similar fan bases, I've always thought. So hope it's all played out in the right spirit. But obviously there is a lot of stuff going on and off the pitch.
I mean, the madness of it all is as if, you know, what Joel Linton's going to go in harder. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, is he?
Really,
yeah.
That's not possible.
Yeah, what's his plan? To turn up armed? So
full riot gear. Tear gas, exactly.
So, you know, I found all of that sort of stuff. Like, you know, if you don't think you're going to St. James' Park and having a tough game, certainly since Howe's been in, then you're absolutely kidding yourself. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the game, looking forward to the spectacle. And, you know, last season we drew this fixture. We also drew the one that we have afterwards, which is Arsenal at home. There's such a thing as a good draw in the Premier League. We're going to a Champions League team. They finished fifth last season. And as far as I'm concerned, the point is a perfectly solid result.
Well, let's just shake hands on that now, and we don't need to bother on Monday. Let's just call it. That's it. Just give Eddie a ring. We've agreed with Neil, we'll have a draw. That's it.
Come on, you Maggies.
So there you go, chaps. Thank you very much again to Neil Atkinson for coming on and talking to us. And speaking of Monday night, we're going to have an instant reaction straight after the game as well with George and Chris. Isn't that right, chaps?
Yes, we will do. Whether it will feature any of George's tears or not, who knows? We'll have to just wait and see.
Why would it feature my tears?
Because usually you get quite emotional when there's a match going on and big game atmosphere, you know, sometimes it just... The emotion just takes hold of you.
I don't like your attitude.
Just love the flag.
I don't like your attitude.
Scored so many goals.
But no, looking forward to that. I mean, it's good having that chat with Neil, because it does remind us that, like, there is a bigger picture, and we obviously want it to be a white hot atmosphere, but done in the right way. And, you know, fans in all of these things are always the people who are kind of bottom on the list, aren't they, in terms of finding out what's going on and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I hope he has a brilliant weekend and a really bad Monday night.
Right then, emails, send them over, podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X and Blue Sky at podonthetyne. And we'll say it again, it's a brilliant time to rate and review us on your podcast outlet of choice. We need those reviews, we need those ratings. So get on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen, and give us the full treatment. That's about it for now, chaps. Thank you very much for your time, Chris.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Oh, I shall, definitely. And thank you, George, as well.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it's time for the statements to be made on the pitch, isn't it?
That's why you're one of the best, George, because you come up with shit like that.
Thank you.
Well done.
What a great outro.
Excellent stuff. Right, that's it. Thanks a lot. Take care of yourselves. We'll speak to you very soon from everybody at Pod on the Tyne. Goodbye.